Blog Talk Radio.
Today's sponsor of Southern Sense is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audible entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Southern Sense.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Good afternoon, America. American. Welcome to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio, Pundit Press, Kinetic Hi-Fi, The Fix FM, Patriot Radio Network, TeaPartyCommunity.com, Ghost Fighter Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the Radio Chick, along with my debonair co-host, Dan, the Butcher of Pundit Press, my vivacious and so intellectual other co-host, Kel Fritzy of Red Fox. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon, Annie.
Like. Good afternoon, Annie and Dan. How are you guys
Good
on this
afternoon.
Tuesday afternoon?
It's Can a imagine- Tuesday afternoon.
It's a Tweet Tuesday. I want to welcome everyone that's up in the chat room and listening online. We've got a great show going on today. We're going to have Ken Kirsch of VetDogs.org. And, you know, guys, we just never, ever can do enough for our vets, can we?
Nope.
Never. Never.
Nope. Got to pardon me, do a little dry throat there. So we're going to have an exciting show. I mean, there's so much that's been going on in the news, and it's sometimes really nice to take a step back from all of the things happening in the world and just do a show like this where we can actually really help someone. Isn't that right?
You're absolutely right, Annie. I've done two radio shows today, my own radio shows. I do a morning and an afternoon edition, and everything has been doom and gloom and And, you know, that's just what's happening in the news today. And, you know, ISIS is once again dominating the news. And, you know, this is one reason why I was so excited when, you know, Annie asked me to co-host her show, because it really does. It gives, you know, me personally, it's such a nice break from the normal routine of other things, and to do shows like this. And it, and I, this, quite honestly, these are my favorite type of shows to do, because it really shows, you know, how we can, you know, because, you know, our veterans have given so much for our country, and this is another way that we can go out and show people, you know, how other people are going out to help them, and, you know, help them with their lives again.
Absolutely true.
I think it's fantastic, too, because I am so sick and tired of service dogs being treated like they are military equipment, and that they are casualties of wars, and that they're left behind.
Exactly.
I have been putting things on my Facebook page for the last couple of days regarding our beautiful, beautiful sentients, our canine companions, and that when the soldiers are coming home, well, the dog stays behind because, well, it's military equipment, therefore dispensable. No, that is not forgivable to me. This is horrid. These are beautiful, beautiful creatures that serve in the military as well as our brave men and women, and they deserve a retirement home, and they deserve to come back to the United States or Canada or Australia, wherever.
Right. We're going to be talking about the ones that help the veterans here back at home, as well as they do have a group that they do work with, sending over therapy dogs for our active troop members. But we're going to get all into that with Ken when he does call in at quarter after the hour. So today's dedication is going to be very special. It's going to go out to all the veterans who have been kicked down, have been knocked down, but got back up, to all the brave men and women of our nation who have served honorably and returned broken, whether in mind or body. They have the courage to fight on, to overcome their handicap and reclaim their lives, their dignity, and their respect. To them, we dedicate this show. To them, this is a very special show, to all these brave men and women. And to them, this song goes out to them. My Name is America by Todd Allen Herndon, because they are the very best of what America is. God bless each and every one of them.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the fire. Taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants,
Are we ready to rock and roll?
We are ready. All at the same time now. 1, 2, 3.
Annie and Anna and myself, we were singing back up in the chat room. I'm America. I love that song. I love that man. What a beautiful song that he composed. I love that gentleman.
Well, again, I want to welcome everyone that's listening in. And guess what? We've got a guest listener listening in, someone that we haven't heard from in a long while, Cool Mike, my other co-host in waiting.
No.
So, Mike, if you want
all
to join
right.
the conversation, just hit me so I know that you're ready to join us and rock and roll here.
Mike's on.
A voice from the past. So, Cool Mike, again, if you want to lift up your mic and join again. You know, just hit number one so I know that you got your hand up. Anyway, we've got a great chat room going on, and we're going to have a great show just waiting for our guests to call in. Everything has been confirmed. But, you know, guys, you know, last night I had my Tea Party meeting, and it's amazing some of the things that you push out of your mind and you forget about going on. And when we have these meetings, a lot of things are said that really, you know, have me sit back and go, you know, you focus on one issue, but there's so many more things that are going on at the same time.
Oh.
How do you spread yourself across the whole spectrum? I'm sure, Dan, you had the same problem when you try to put, you know, your website together, Pundit and Press, each day, picking out what articles to highlight and what to write about.
It's,
how do we keep our fingers on everything?
It's a never-ending battle. I mean, it's, you know, we try to, you know, of course at Pundit Press, since, you know, we have such a large readership, you know, we try to cover, you know, as much of the breaking news as we possibly can. Of course, you know, some days, you know, some news topics are going to dominate more than others. You know, a prime example of that is, you know, how we were trying to, when we had the, you know, about the same time that we had everything breaking out in Ferguson, we had the, you know, we had the first beheading of an American journalist take place over in Iraq. So, you know, we had to find a, obviously those were two very important stories, and we had to find a, and they ended up dominating our coverage for a few days. But, you know, we had to find an equal balance between those two. And then on top of that, you have so many other stories that are breaking, you know, and it's, and that's why, like on my website particularly, that's why we have, you know, we have the Pundit Press Radio Network. We've got 26 shows on there now. We've got Pundit Press TV, where we're carrying, you know, live stream videos from Reuters, BBC, from Associated Press. Pundit Press is as an actual member of Associated Press. And then, of course, our live radio news broadcast, which I do twice a day. So, you know, we try to get, and that doesn't even include all of the commentary and in-depth articles and investigative journalism that we do as well. So it's a, you know, it's really something, you know, it's not, you know, I think when we had Warner Todd Houston on, you know, he summed it up best that some days that, you know, in my particular case, I can attest that, you know, some days I'm doing this 18 to 24 hours, but, you know, it's more than you know, it's, and a lot of the folks that do, you know, particularly the folks that do radio shows on BTR, these are folks that, you know, they, most of these people, they don't do it for the money. They do it because they've got a calling. They feel that they have a mission and something to accomplish. And you know, I'm very fortunate that I get to do what I love for a living, you know, do various radio shows, whatever. But it's also more than that. It's a passion. It's a calling. It's something that I feel that I have to do. And so, and that's what keeps me going personally. And I'm sure that, you know, Annie and Kel, you can add something else to that as well.
Oh, yeah, well, absolutely. And Dan, you and Annie, the both of you, you are tireless in what you do in getting the word out there. And I sometimes I just sit back in my computer chair and just go, because of the hard work that you both do. But it's true what you say, Dan, is that it is a passion. I produce about 5 shows. I'm very proud of my work. I'm very proud of the hosts that I encourage to get the word out. It's not an easy task. It is not one that I would wish upon my best friend some days. But it is fulfilling.
And it is the fact
that we are getting the word out, because that I always feel that time is of the essence, and that we have so little time but so much to say. And Pundit Press Radio is a wonderful venue, and I'm not just blowing sunshine, Dan, because you're kind of like our boss, but yeah. But it's a wonderful, wonderful website. I'm so proud that Red Fox Blogger is carried there.
Well, Kel, that said, and Dan, let's bring on our guest, Ken Kirsch of GetDogs.org.
Right.
Good afternoon, Mr. Kirsch.
Hi, how are you?
All right, we're doing fine.
Great.
Well, welcome aboard here to Southern Sense, which is carried on Pundit Press, Kinetic High Five, Patriot Radio Network, Tea Party Community, Ghost Fighter Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. All said in one breath.
Great job.
Oh, Mr. Kirsch is with VetDogs.org, a very, very wonderful organization. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome aboard.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right. Now, you've got yourself a very, very interesting background. You started off your career as in the U.S. Army as a military police dog handler. You went on to narcotic detection, explosive detection, Secret Service under Jimmy Carter, and then later on Ronald Reagan. You performed over 770 missions throughout the world as an explosive dog, a detector dog handler. You had duty in Egypt, Honduras, Germany, East Germany, all the NATO countries, and Korea. You were under General Crosby Saint, the Supreme Allied Commander of the Armed Forces at Europe. And you actually, and this I found very, very fascinating, were at Checkpoint Charlie the day the Berlin Wall came down.
That's absolutely true. It sounds pretty impressive when I hear somebody else say it. I sound old. All right. Yeah.
Well, actually, you were in the military at the time I was going to college, so, you know, don't worry about it.
All right, it's all good, I promise. Great. I really appreciate you guys having me on. I really do. So,
now, you've had 31 years' experience handling dogs. You know, tell us about, you know, some of your experiences.
Well, I've handled, it's interesting, because I've handled dogs from patrol dogs doing borders on the DMZ in Korea to overseas to explosive detection work at the Olympics in Los Angeles, the VIPs to, you know, and all of those missions, believe me, they weren't all that exciting. On one of the President Reagan's inaugurations, I was searching outhouses out on the parade route. So believe me, it's not all that great, but there's a lot of good stuff with it. And then when I got out of the service, I decided to take a completely different direction with my dog career, and I got into training service dogs for the disabled and hearing dogs for the hearing impaired deaf community. And I've been doing that. It'll be October will be my 25th year doing that.
Wow. Wow. It is very, very fascinating. You know, now you're with vetdogs.org. Tell us about that group of people. It's a 501c3, which is attached to the Guide Dog Foundation.
Right. So I actually work at the Guide Dog Foundation for the Blind here in Smithtown, New York, and I'm the program manager for America's Vet Dogs. And what we do is we train service dogs for honorably discharged veterans and first responders. And we train the service dogs. We don't really care what their disability is or how they got their disability. They just, most of it's all combat related or service related. And we also do combination dogs where they can have lost a hearing and maybe have lost a limb or something. And, you know, we train them to do any number of tasks. They can pull a veteran's wheelchair. They can help you get dressed or undressed. They can help you stand up, open and close doors. They can open refrigerators and get your medication or something to eat or drink, turn on and off lights, wake you up if you're having a nightmare interruption, if you're having nightmares or nightmare trauma. They can push buttons, go get help, answer the phone. I mean, the list goes on and on. We custom train the dogs for whatever that veteran's needs for them to be more in, to gain their independence back and to gain some of their freedom back.
All right. Now, we do have a caller, believe it or not, coming in on the line. Let me bring this individual in. Looks like a Skype call. You're on the air live with Southern Sense. I'm your host, Annie, along with our guest, Ken Kirsch, and our co-hosts, Dan and Kel. Who am I speaking to?
It's Pastor Green, Annie. How are you guys today?
All right. How are you doing, Pastor? You have a question for us or our guest?
Yes,
hi, Michael.
I do. Hey, Kel. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Michael.
Yeah, I happened to see you had this gentleman on. I wanted to just say hello to him and tell him my great appreciation for his military service and working with canine dogs for our veterans. I have spent about 5 years over at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center meeting a lot of combat wounded warriors, and I have a very close connection to that community, and it's a really it's a cause very dear to my heart. And I have been to this website before, America's Vet Dogs, and it's outstanding. I have heard of the work of your organization, sir, and I want to just tell you that it's just tremendous how much these combat wounded warriors benefit from having a service dog in their life.
Well, I got to tell you, I greatly appreciate that, and so do the veterans. I also spend a lot of time down at Walter Reed and other veteran facilities around the country, and it's really almost a miracle to meet them for the first time in recovery, and then to see them come through our program and come through class. And receive an assistance dog and then go on to live their lives. And it is kind of a remarkable thing to see.
Yeah, it's so heartwarming. I am a great dog lover. I have this is my second dog I've had in my life now. And we all know the companionship and love and affection that we receive as humans from these creatures. I'm sure we probably met some of the same wounded warriors. I wouldn't doubt it. And
yeah.
I remember seeing, I've always loved to see the therapy dogs, you know. I've seen a bunch of them, of course, in Building 19. And
sure.
Then over there in Building 62. Unfortunately, though, they came up with a policy, and to my understanding, they don't permit any of the outpatient wounded warriors in Building 62 to have service dogs currently, you know, in their rooms there. I don't completely understand that, but it's, a decision that was made for whatever reasons and whatnot. But I began going to the old Walter Reed in D.C. in 2009. My dad was a combat medic, and he was a veteran, and kind of, you know, got me started on this whole mission and whatnot. And Then, of course, it moved to Bethesda, Maryland in 2011. And I was just with a combat wounded warrior over the weekend who is actually staying at one of the Fisher houses in D.C., a close friend of mine, him and his wife, and we wound up taking him out for his birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, just briefly, because it's quite a story. He got wounded in 2004. He was in a Humvee. He was in Iraq, and, you know, the explosion ripped through the vehicle. He lost a limb, but the worst thing that happened to this this sergeant is that the shrapnel went into his body, devastated his digestive tract, and he's had so many surgeries on and off for probably about 60 surgeries to date. He just finished a major surgery at Walter Reed in May, and they were able to kind of reconnect his intestines and take him off a colostomy bag, but he's had complications, unfortunately. He's still an outpatient, and, you know, we're just doing a lot of praying for him. But he certainly could benefit from your organization. They have some dogs back in Puerto Rico, but they may have to relocate to Maryland. His doctors want him close to the facility for probably the next year. So maybe we could communicate somehow, you know, in the near future. And, you know, I'll talk with him, of course, and see maybe there's a possibility, if he was interested, of you know, getting them a service dog through your organization.
Sure. You know, we just finished placing a guide dog with a blind veteran from Puerto Rico.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Yeah. The Guide Dog Foundation is we have very long arms. We don't just serve dogs in New York. We serve dogs all over the country, and we definitely will extend our boundaries if we need be, if there's a veteran in need.
That's outstanding. I'm also located in New York. Whereabouts is the organization located?
Midtown.
Okay, I know exactly where it is. Sure.
All right, out here in Long Island.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, right there in Suffolk County. Sure.
Yep.
That's outstanding. May I ask when you went in, you were at what point did you get into becoming a you know, working with military working dogs as a handler?
Well, I went, funny enough, I went through MP school and I graduated from the MP Academy at Fort McClellan. And my first duty assignment was the 138th MP Company out of Fort Jackson, South Carolina. And the canine department was looking for volunteers. And born and raised Northern Michigan boy, used dogs my entire life hunting. And I went down and volunteered to potentially OJT or on the job training down at the kennels for the 138th MP Company. And what they did is they put you in what's called a sentry suit with these big sentry suits. Your whole body's padded, and they put a helmet on you, and then they have you run across this fenced-in field, and they released 5 sentry dogs on me at the same time. And I had one on each leg, one on each arm, and one about just below my throat, and the dogs were going at me, took me to the ground, and the handlers got the dogs off, the kennel master, they picked me up, and I apparently, if you didn't have an accident or cry in the sentry suit, then you pretty much were in the kennels. So that's how I got my start in the canine corps.
Well, that's a great story. Yeah, I've seen plenty of videos, never live in person, but when those guys suit up and they let the dogs go...
Yeah, it's interesting. Here at America's Vet Dogs, we do a couple of really cool things. We pay for all the transportation for all of our veterans to come to the 2-week class once they've been through the application process, and that's all we pay for everything. You know, they're in the dormitories here at our student residence. The chefs cook all the meals. Everything's taken care of for the veterans here while they're on class. And all of that is at no charge. The dogs don't cost anything. The flight, nothing. Every single thing is paid for by donors. And the one thing I do in every single one of my veterans' classes, I try 100% of the time to bring in veterans from every single era. I like to have veterans that are picking up service dogs that are World War II veterans, Korean War veterans, Vietnam War veterans, Cold War veterans, and then, of course, the most current, you know, post-9/11 veterans that come in. So I like to have classes that have veterans from every single era because, you know, we're a unit, you know, we take care of each other, and we can learn a heck of a lot from each other, the younger veterans from the older veterans and the older veterans from the younger veterans.
Now that's very interesting because now you're able to say to each one of them in each different generation, this is not something new. You're not going through anything new. We've been through this before, and we can help each other. It's such a
right.
wonderful message.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to tell you, it's amazing to hear some of our, I think it was our August class, we had a 90-year-old Marine Corps corporal named Annabelle that came through our class and got a service dog. 90 years old, World War II, she drove a deuce
wow.
and a half during World War II, was a Marine Corps corporal. And she was about, I don't know, 4'8", 4'9", maybe. And she was, she showed up for class, she drove to class, came to get her dog, and I went out to her car to help her carry her bags. And I said, Annabelle, I said, where did the, I said, do you want me to carry your bags? And she looked at me and she goes, absolutely, you're going to carry my bags in. And she goes, and you're going to take care of them. She goes, I'm a nurse. Know where your liver is, and if you don't do it right, I'm a Marine. I'll tear your liver out. And I'm telling you, man, she was all that in a bag of chips. It was great. And then we had that was a big class. We had 13 veterans in that class, ranging from World War II all the way to the current conflicts. And it was pretty amazing.
Ken, I have a question for you real quick. Before the show started, Annie and Kel and I were discussing a lot of our military dogs that currently serve in theater with our military troops. And of course, you know, a lot of times these, you know, when these dogs are done with their service, they are retired, and you know, they become family pets or what have you. And I assume that most of the dogs that you work with to train for this program are started out as puppies and such. Is there a place for some of our military canines that have served in theater after they're retired to come home and possibly be retrained as a service dog such as this? Because I know you have a since they are used to working directly with the military people, because I know you have a military facility dog program where you specially train canines to work in theater with active military personnel that might need emotional support and help with sleep and disorders and such. So can our dogs that are already serving in the military after they're retired be retrained for a program such as yours?
Yeah, what's interesting, being an ex-military working dog handler, you know, I've delved into that a little bit. There's several issues with that. It depends on what the dog was trained to do. If it was a sentry dog, if a patrol dog, if it was a scent detection dog or perimeter protection dog, that type of thing, we wouldn't be able to bring that dog back and utilize him in our type of industry just strictly for the liability and the safety. I do know that a lot of those dogs are going back to Lackland Air Force Base, Detachment 37, and I believe they have their whole entire program now where you can go online to DET 37 at Lackland and adopt those dogs. But for us, no, we wouldn't be able to. And then the age, the whole thing with the age of the dogs when they come back. Now, we do have a program, CUSS dog program, and that has combat stress dogs, and we train, those are our Labrador Retrievers, our Golden Retrievers, and our Crosses that we train, and we assign them to Army units, or that we assign them to the Army, and the Army assigns them to units that are in theater, the Combat Operational Stress Control dogs, that's what you're talking about,
yeah.
And those dogs do come back and get retired, and sometimes we do use them in that way.
All right, guys.
First of all, Mr. Kirsch, let me say that it's an. Let me say it's an honor.
Kel, can you hold that thought for a second? We got to do something. We got to actually try to earn some money here. So we'll be back in exactly 1 minute. Hang on. 7 Cents is now being sponsored by Audible Books, and you know I'm not a big fan of these online books. You know. I don't like, you know, having to download them and sit in front of a computer or my smartphone or something and read. But I checked out Audible, and I was amazed.
If you go to audibletrials.com/southernsense, you get a 30-day free trial. Now, I tried it out, and I wanted, because you get a free book if you download, and I decided, what book am I going to download? So I thought, what do I not have time to read that I can listen to and be enriched? And I downloaded the Federalist Papers. Now, this is a 3-volume, 9 hours of recording, 30-some-odd dollar value I got for free. So check out audibletrial.com/southernsense and download your own free book.
All right, and we're back. So, Kel, go ahead.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And Ken, it is a pleasure to speak with you, an absolute pleasure. And just to expand on what Dan was sharing with you, service dogs that have seen theater. And a lot of these dogs, though, they are not coming home. They're considered military equipment. And when the soldiers are, they're deployed with their handlers. I don't like that term, but, for the sake of brevity, I'll use it. When the soldier is done his tour of duty, the dog is often left behind because it's considered redundant military equipment. Is there any way that we can figure a way to get these dogs home? This is what Dan, Annie, and I were speaking about at the beginning of the program, that these beautiful creatures, these sentients, are being left behind in theater. Is there any way that we can ensure that these are treated as canine veterans and that they are able to come home?
I think that's a good question. As far as our combat operational stress control dogs, those dogs do come back to us, and we retire them to homes. As far as the military dogs, it's different from when I was in to when it is now. I'm sure you know what the phrase coming on levy means. That means that you get a set of orders from the Department of the Army saying that you're going overseas. Well, my dogs came on levy twice before I came on levy. So back when I was in, and you shipped with your dog. If you went overseas, your dog went overseas. If you went to a different stateside unit, your dog went with you. So now, I mean, the only thing I could suggest is the department that handles that is the Detachment 37 at Lackland Air Force Base, contacting them and find out what they're doing with them. But I have looked into adopting the retired military working dogs, and I do know that they do. I know where those dogs come from and whether they were in theater and back, I don't know that answer.
Mm.
I wish I did. I wish I could say, hey, yeah, they all come back, but that's just not my realm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's funny because...
And thanks, Ken.
Sure, you betcha.
Ken, what's funny is because, I'm retired out of NYPD, and I do know that at NYPD, when the dog retires, the person that is that dog's handler actually adopts the dog most of the time. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they're adopted by someone else. They're not discarded as not being equipment. They're not looked at as being equipment. They're looked at as being a member of the department, a police officer in themselves. So I think that's the difference
in
mentality.
I know that my dogs, when my dog, my service dog passed away, I mean, he had full military honors, had a rank ceremony.
Oh, wow.
And we buried him, and he's in an airfield in Germany, my last dog. So, I mean, I really can't speak to what's going on nowadays. It's been over 25 years for me. So, I try not to think about that. That was yesterday. That's what it was yesterday. Yeah.
No, I'm familiar where the vetdog.org is located up on Jericho Turnpike in Smithtown, because I actually lived in Northport for, about 7 years before we moved down here to South Carolina. Actually, I was within walking distance of Main Street, Northport. So if you're familiar with Northport, if you go into Main Street Cafe, if it's still there, which is about a couple of doors off the harbor, there's a back wall with a bunch of cartoon sketches, and if you look at the very top right hand, no, left hand corner, top one in the top corner. That's a sketch of my husband and I.
Really? I have to go back.
Well, when you go in, you just turn around and tell the bartender, you see that couple up there, the guy that's by the printing press and the woman with him? I was on the radio with her.
Yeah, I know them.
So it's a small, small world. Mm-hmm. Small world. But, you know, there's one question I always wanted to know. How the heck do you pick out the dogs to train? And then how do you actually go through training them? I mean, to teach them to react, like, for example, I'm trying to remember if you were on Hannity or Wilkow that I had heard you originally, and one gentleman there was having seizures, and he had a dog that helped him with his seizures. How do you get to train these dogs to sense these things or to do these acts? It baffles me.
Sure, it's actually pretty interesting. So you know we breed our own dogs here at the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs, and then for the America's Vet Dog program, we actually have prisons. We have 10 prisons, men's and women's prisons in 3 different states that actually raise our puppies for us and start training the dogs with the commands and the standards that we use here at Vet Dogs. And then when the dogs are returned about 14 months of age to here to Smithtown, we temperament test the dogs, and we temperament test the dogs to see what their potential is. Is there potential as a service dog? Is there potential as a hearing dog? Is there potential as a seizure response dog? And then we gear that dog towards whatever potential it has. So we'll talk about the seizure response. So a seizure, somebody that has epilepsy, what happens is the dog, the person does the same physical characteristic every time before they have an epileptic seizure, whether it's grand mal, petit mal, or whatever. Maybe it's simply the fact of turning their head to the right repetitively, turning their head to the right, turning their head to the right. And what we do is we find out what that cue is, and then we train the dog to visually pick up on that cue and then do something. So the dog sees the person, he starts having a seizure, and the cue is he constantly turns his head to the right. The dog then goes, dials 911. The dog can then go get medication. The dog can then go get someone. The dog can go get the phone. The dog can go get some food. Whatever a particular person needs, we can train the dog to do. And then once the team has been together for a while, the dog starts picking up on that odor. Because with epilepsy, the chemical imbalance happens in the brain. The body puts out an odor, and obviously you can't can that odor and train it. So we pick up on the physical cue, and then as the dog and the person are together longer and longer, the dog starts sensing or detecting the seizure coming on as time goes by. But we don't claim that they can predict them or anything like that, but we most certainly can train them to do that, and it's simply scent discrimination. It's really interesting, or visual discrimination with a physical cue.
That's absolutely fascinating. You know, because you have them where they, like you said, help people get dressed and everything else. Getting dressed every day is something different. How do dogs know to do with what type of piece of clothing?
Well, what will happen is we'll have to put it on cue. We put it to a command, and let's say the person can get their feet and their calves and their knees in the pants, and then they'll lay down, and then we'll simply show the dog, we'll target where they want the dog in the pants. The dog will hold on to the pants and pull up, or the same thing, they'll get on the pant leg and pull off. It's just we custom train every single dog for each person, and everyone's different. In our last class, we had two veterans that had back issues, and one of them couldn't sit up in bed, and we simply got a device that's called a figure-eight tug toy, and the person held on to it. The dog retrieved the figure-eight, took it to the veteran. The veteran held on to it, gave the dog the command to pull him up, and now he can sit up in bed. And the other veteran lost, his body, his lower extremities would become numb, And he couldn't roll over in bed, and the only way to get feeling to his lower part of his body is to roll him over. So we simply put a strap on each arm, on each bicep, and the dog, on command, the dog would roll him over from his back to his left side, from his left side to his right side, or all the way over.
Wow.
Wow.
That is absolutely fascinating. Go ahead, Dan.
And Ken, I want to go back to a little bit here because I found your prison puppy program absolutely fascinating. And these are puppies that you actually take into these prisons. They actually start their training with these prisoners. They live in the cells with these prisoners, and it's a win-win situation for your program, for the veterans and the prisoners, because they have the opportunity to give back a little bit. Can you expand a little bit more, you know, what the prison puppy program is about and what an important role that it plays with your organization?
Oh, man, it's absolutely – thank you. That's absolutely a huge role for us. So we have curriculum, standards, and interview process. Prisoners have to meet certain criteria. They can have committed certain crimes. We won't take them into the program. They have to have several years of good behavior behind themselves. They have to be recommended by their lieutenant or their sergeant. And then they go through an interview process. Just like you would interview for a job, they're interviewing for a job with vet dogs. And I also, what I'd like to do in almost every situation, if I can, in the prisons that I have, the 10 prisons that we have programs in, is I hire the veterans. I hire veterans, and they're veterans, again, helping veterans. And it's an opportunity for them to give back. And they're several times, you know, there's, you know, they're there for an extended period of time, so they become better and better and better and better handlers as each dog they get. But they take them through all of the socialization. They have to have a commitment where the dog lives with them in their kennel, and I'm sorry, in their cell. They have to give up some of their rations for their dog. I mean, they have to be able to give up. They have weekly training. They have classes they have to attend. They're tested. And then the dogs are given back to weekend puppy raisers on Friday night, and then the weekend puppy raisers, who are obviously civilians out in the community, take the dogs, and they go back and they live in homes. And they, you know, they go out with the family, and they go to the beach, and they live in the house, and they go to the ball game and the kids' soccer game, and they go to church and school and work. And then on Sunday nights, they get returned back to the prisoners, and then they have a partnership with the weekend raiser and the prisoner. Together, they raise the dog for a veteran.
Now, do they get, like, time off or something like that from their sentence when they do these?
It depends. It depends on the prison. We have Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Maryland, and it's a job, and they get paid. And then some of, you know, I know that in Massachusetts, it depends on the prison, because we have maximum security, we have minimum security, we have men's, we have women's. Each prison and each situation is different, but sometimes they get it's called good time towards their sentence. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Absolutely fascinating.
I've watched some documentaries about dogs that have been used as therapy in the prison system, and it's amazing. We deal with such hardened criminals, but when you give them the loving affection of a dog, it rejuvenates their spirit. The transformation in these people is unbelievable to me.
I'm so proud of that. It's a full circle thing. It's one of the craziest things is I go into the men's maximum security prison in Maryland. And we bring in these late-week-old puppies and these lifers, these people in there for serious, serious crimes against society that just fall apart. It's a little puppy. It's unbelievable what it does for the morale and for everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
And one of the things that we do here at Vet Dogs, if the veteran's interested in our celebration Sunday, we actually will Skype the veteran with the prisoner. If the veteran is okay with that, and they they get to meet and they get to see where their dog's going, and they get to meet the prisoner who raised their dog for 15 months. It comes full circle from the puppy coming in to, you know, it's a great program. You know, I'm very, very happy with it here.
That's fascinating.
I'm so impressed by that because this is a wonderful program, and I'm just going to stick with the prison program. One documentary that I watched was a women's prison,
mm-hmm.
and they were bringing in puppies, and they were raising them. And when these women were released, some of them were there for summary offenses, some of them for indictable offenses, but when they were released upon their stint, as it were, they came out better people. Dogs have such an effect on all of us, every one of us. I am so proud that I can say that I have my little doggy, and he's sleeping behind me right now on his big old dog bed. He's a rescue from the Humane Society. The power of the canine is unfathomable. It's hard to explain. It's hard to, you know, like words cannot convey, Ken, just how powerful the love of a canine is.
Yeah, I did it from the military end all the way to the service dog end. It's the same thing. It's amazing. I like to call it on our, we have a graduation here. It's called Celebration Sunday, where the foster puppy raisers, the sponsors, and they get to come in and they get to meet the veterans who are getting their dogs. And, you know, we set up these little pods where we introduce the veteran to the puppy raisers and the people who are involved with the dog, raising the dog, and they'll bring in puppy teeth, they'll bring in little baby puppy pictures, they'll bring in its first little baby puppy cape, and they've got, like, it's just like having a baby book, and then, you know, for when your child goes off to college, it's just, it's absolutely unbelievable. And then the people, and the dogs, the dog, of course, is the centerpiece of this whole thing, and then now you have this, you have this lifetime relationship with the people that you had no idea that you'd ever would be involved with you. It's a miracle.
We got a question up in the chat room from Vito. He wants to know, when the women's sentence is over in the prison, what happens to the puppies that they were taking care of? Or is this timed with their sentence?
Well,
they're adopted out.
So what happens is that the dogs, they come in for training. So let's say one of the prisoners has a dog, and the dog's returned at 15 months of age, but the prisoner gets paroled at 9 months. Well, we pass that dog on to a new prisoner, and then the dog stays in a program, then comes back to vet dogs. Every handler, there's a primary handler and a secondary handler in all of my prisons, because, you know, sometimes people get paroled. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, or they get sick or whatever, so there has to be someone to back up.
Sure, and so, the primary and a secondary handler for every single dog, and they do every single thing together. Oftentimes, they're in the same cell together. And, you know, sometimes things happen in prison, and, you know, they maybe have to, you know, maybe they'll be out of the loop for a few days. And then, you know, so the secondary handler takes over.
Mm-hmm. I assume that they were adopted out because I don't know about all of the prison programs, but I know that some programs that when the prisoner is released after serving his or her sentence, that a dog goes back and is adopted out. That was my assumption. So,
yeah, I know our dogs went for training. Yeah, mm-hmm. We just have another prisoner. We have a lot of applications, a lot of people that want to be in our prison programs, a lot of prisoners.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine there's a waiting list on that, isn't there?
There is, yep. And it's a long vetting process. I mean, we really vet out these people, you know, and make sure that they're safe and they're good and they're going to be good trainers for us. Mm-hmm.
All right, and the website is vetdogs.org. We've been putting it up in the chat room. I'll put it up there again so people can click on it. And they can make donations through the website, right?
Absolutely, you bet. Uh-huh. We're a 501c3. nonprofit organization. We do everything on donations, absolutely.
Now, there's a certain etiquette when you do approach someone with a vet dog. You know, there's certain a lot of do's and don'ts. What are some of the don'ts?
Well, some of the don'ts are, so we actually have patches on our vest that say, please do not pet me, I'm working. And so the don'ts are, don't call the dog over to you, don't give the dog food, don't engage the dog, you know, don't call the dog's name, don't give the dog some food or throw things. Some of the do things are, is approach the person with the dog and ask them if they can say hi to the dog, if they can maybe pet the dog or introduce themselves or ask questions. So if you have a balanced walking dog and you rely on this dog to keep you upright and you're walking on the dog and the dog is your balance, so basically your dog is your cane as one explanation, and then someone distracts the dog or shows the dog some food or calls the dog over or gets down on the ground to say hi to the dog, now the person's going to get knocked over, and you could potentially put the veteran in danger or the person utilizing the assistance dog in danger. It's not because they want to be mean. It's not because they don't want to engage the public. It's a safety issue for the person because you don't know exactly what that dog's doing for that person. And so all you do is ask. And people, one of the great things about dogs is it's a great barrier, breaks that barrier from people, especially disabled people. All the trainers, we do these skills where we get new trainers where we put people in wheelchairs and we go out to these really busy public places and then we wheel past people in our wheelchairs, and as soon as we get past them, we have the trainer turn around and look, and you'll be amazed at how many people turn around and stare at you after you go by. And so it's a great barrier. It breaks that barrier right down, and it's a way for people to engage someone with a disability and just talk to them. I think that's a great part of what a dog can do.
That's absolutely amazing, because I was looking at the do's and don'ts. You know, you're saying give respect to the working dog, allow the handler to give the commands, don't you say anything. You even say, you know, when you talk to the person, ask if you can assist them. Just allow it to rest undisturbed. You know, that's one thing, because out here in Beaufort, South Carolina, we've got a lot of outdoor restaurants, and a lot of people have their dogs with them. But everyone's always going up to them and giving them water or petting them or anything. But with a service dog, you don't want them to do that. You know, the dog is working, and people have to understand that dog is working. Have you had problems with the dogs not being allowed into certain places?
Well, you know, sure. Occasionally you run into access issues. But we spend a lot of time educating our students, you know, our veterans and our guide dog students that are going through classes on access issues. And a lot of times, honestly, it's just ignorance of the law. We've had situations where they want to charge them a hotel cleaning fee, taxis don't want to let them ride because they got a dog. And, of course, all of those things are against the law and under the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so we support all of our graduates, and then we try to get people to go to our website. There's a resource page on our website, and it talks about etiquette and ADA laws, and we always go at this from the angle of education first, and then if we have to get, you know, then, you know, if we have to, you know, get firmer with it, we will. But sure, we've had situations where our clients have been denied access. You know, service dogs are 36 years old. You know, guide dogs have been around for over 100 and some years. You know, service dogs and hairy dogs, you know, were invented in, 1979 out in California, and so that's relatively a new thing to the United States.
Oh, man.
Ken, I'd like to ask you about something real quick. You know, and this will kind of continue the conversation that we're having. You know, most people associate guide dogs, therapy dogs, service dogs with military veterans that have returned from theater, with people with medical conditions, special needs, et cetera. But, we briefly mentioned your military therapy dogs, where you train dogs to go back into theater
and into military institutions such as VA medical centers and nursing homes, you know, to help veterans that are still active duty military personnel with physical, emotional therapy, et cetera, wounded soldiers. And you, you train combat stress control dogs, physical and occupational therapy dogs, and emotional therapy dogs as part of your military therapy dog program. Can you explain that a little bit more? Because I really find it fascinating that we actually train, you know, service dogs at this time to send back into theater to help active duty military personnel as well.
Well, it's interesting. It's just like what we were talking about, you know, like dogs in hospitals, dogs in children's cancer wards, dogs in, you know, Alzheimer homes, senior homes, that sort of thing. Dogs in theater with veterans going through theater, that we simply teach the dogs to interact with the veterans while they're there. You know, what's great about dogs and the miracle about dogs is, one, they're non-judgmental. They don't care who you are, how big you are, how small you are, where you're from, what your accent is. They love you because they're you. They're non-judgmental, and they don't care if you're disabled, if you're not disabled. They just want to interact with you. And in theater, you bring the dogs around, we walk the dogs around, we let them say hi. Soldiers open up, they'll talk to their dogs. These soldiers will talk to their dogs about what's going on with them before they'll talk to another person. And so that's what we do with them in theater, and we go from location to location to location, you know, depending on the request of the commanders. As far as like an occupational therapist can use the dog to, the dog can be there when the person's, you know, getting their legs stretched or their back stretched or their arms, you know, they're going through a tremendous amount of pain. And they're trying to learn to walk again. There's a dog there that they can concentrate on and talk to. And then at the end of their physical session, the dog can interact with them. In the psychiatrist's office, you know, the dog can be there. And, you know, if a dog, you know, a dog that really wants to interact with you, you know, you're going to pet it whether you want to pet it or not, because they're not going to let you not pet them. You know, which is, you know, that's the nice part about dogs. And it's comforting. And it relaxes you, and it kind of makes you more willing to make yourself vulnerable and take a risk and take a chance. And in different types of therapy, they're even using dogs now in court cases for children that have been traumatized, where the dog is there with the child, and the child is safer and more secure. You know, they have an opportunity to talk about their issues more, and it's amazing, you know, that the people talk to the dog.
I think my cats may be part dog, I think. Now, you also take them into nursing homes, don't you?
We don't, but there are definitely a lot of organizations that do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I have a friend of mine, she had worked in a nursing home, and she always had a therapy dog with her that they took around to a lot of the rooms, and it really made a huge difference on these people. You know, if people wanted to help, what can they do?
Well, they can go to our website, and they can most certainly donate. We're always using volunteers. You know, they can volunteer at our events, our fundraisers. You know, we have a big dog walk and walk. Something we're calling it walk and stroll. Stroll and roll coming up. Our golf outings. Volunteer here at the school, at the foundation, at our other locations. Of course, donations are always good. And we also you can go to our website, and I believe there's a part on our website, there's donation, there's a, or in our newsletter, there's a list of items to be donated. And one of the cool things, you can find out what's going on in your area, is follow us on Facebook, and we have postings there all the time, and you can interact, and you can, you know, I think right now we're having we have a contest going on where we're naming for a grant right now. There's always things to do to help out the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs.
Now, you've got a Paws in the Park coming up Saturday, September 20th. What's that about?
I know that we have there's two events going on that weekend. I believe it's our Stroll and Roll, and then over at Suffolk County Fairgrounds, I believe that there's another event going on over there that you can come and get involved with America's Vet Dogs. I'd have to look up and see exactly what that event. I'm not in that department. I don't know. I know that they're both going on, but I don't know exactly what they're doing.
Well, people can then go to vetdogs.org and click on the events to see what's going on, right?
Absolutely. You bet. Mm-hmm.
All right. And in Facebook, it's American Vet Dogs on Facebook. And you're also up on Twitter?
It's America's Vet Dogs. And, yes, we're on Twitter also.
Man, it's so much that you guys do. Now, how do you get the veterans in to you? I mean, do you go out looking for them, or do they come looking for you? You know, how does that work? And do you work with the VA?
Yes, on all of those. we go to all three quarterly, plus we go to the other veteran hospitals, word of mouth, veterans organizations, the American Legions, the VFWs, the DAVs. We do presentations, demonstrations. We have literature. I mean, you can go to our website. You can go to our Facebook page. A friend has a dog from us, and then you can contact, you know, all you got to do is contact us, and we'll get right back a hold of you and find out. Or if you know someone that's a veteran or that needs a guide dog from the Guide Dog Foundation that's blind, I mean, you know, just have them contact us, and I guarantee you we'll take good care of you.
Ken, I have a question about the types of dogs that make, you know, for different duties to be trained. Do you find that purebred dogs make the best types of service dogs, or can mixed breed dogs that are rescued from animal shelters as puppies, can they be trained to do the type of assignments and jobs that they're being trained for? So what's the best, you know, can you use both pure breed, can you use mixed breed, rescued sheltered puppies? You know, you kind of get the gist of my question.
Sure. Here at America's Vet Dogs, we use Labrador Retrievers, Golden Retrievers. We cross the two of them, so we have Lab Golden Crosses. And we also breed a few standard poodles and a few collies. And, you know, in over all my years in the industry, of course, I've used rescue dogs. But what we find is the Labrador Retrievers and the Golden Retrievers are the best dogs for the jobs, for what we need. But I'm a huge fan of rescue dogs. I'm a huge fan of mixed breed dogs. I don't think I've ever personally myself speaking, owned a purebred dog. I've always had rescue dogs. So I'm a big rescue dog guy myself.
Now, so you go and regularly go out into, like, the kennels, or not to the kennels, to the, like, the ASPCA or the shelters and look for dogs?
No, we don't do that here at Vet Dogs, but a lot of assistance dog agencies do that. Mm-hmm. We did it one time here, and then what we found is that the percentage of the dogs that actually make it out to the veterans is very, very, very low. We have to do our due diligence with the donated dollars to us. So what we found, honestly, is that the Labrador Retrievers and the Golden Retrievers serve the most variety of the veterans, and that's what we pretty much stick to here.
So you're breeding them yourselves then?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I have a question, and this is Kel again. I was in an environment where there was a lady, and she was taking in dogs to be trained for various duties, whether it be helping the blind or helping the disabled, whatever. And the dogs that she was training, they had their coats on saying dog in training, please do not disturb. But she was remiss in her duties in that she was allowing people to approach that creature and pet it and play with it and this and that and the other thing. How strict do we have to be when we are training these beautiful creatures?
Extremely strict.
She was not strict, obviously.
Right, Yeah, you know, we're very, very responsible breeders here at the Guide Dog Foundation. We take it very, very seriously. In our foster puppy homes, you know, our foster puppies, our puppy walkers, you know, those the puppies themselves wear jackets, identifying them as a puppy in training that you cannot bet them. You know, you can't, there's an old saying in dog training, and it goes like this. It says, if you feed a dog from the table one time, you're going to spend the rest of your life with a dog that begs at the table. All right? So if you allow a dog to be fed in public the rest of that dog's life, because dogs imprint, things imprint on dogs, they're going to go out and seek attention from the public, and now you've got potentially a guide dog that's guiding a blind client down the sidewalk, and somebody walks up, and because they were allowed to be petted, he decides he's going to go over and pet them, and now pulls them in front of a car or something. So, you know, the dogs are great. This is serious. I take my responsibilities as a trainer and our placement of high quality assistance dogs very seriously.
So you're actually monitoring how the puppy is being raised. So you're constantly checking in with the person that is raising the puppy then?
Oh, absolutely. We have bi-weekly puppy classes. They have to do weekly puppy reports. We do check-ins. We have outings. The puppy walkers come to our events. They come on campus. And obviously our prisoners who are raising them, we have very close contact with them. We can monitor them hourly.
Doing it. Big brother watching you.
You know, they're not leaving the state anytime soon, hopefully. So with our dogs, so it's all good there.
Now, tell us about some of the success stories that you've had with some of these people that you've been working with. I'm sure there's got to be, you know, story after story you can tell us about how wonderful the, you know, it's helped other people's lives.
Yeah, it's interesting. We just had a Navy medical corpsman. And for those of you who know what that job is, you know, the United States Naval corpsmen are probably some of America's tough guys. These naval corpsmen are always assigned to Marine Corps units. And, you know, they're the guys that when someone's shot and goes down, when they yell medic or corpsman, it's the Navy guy that runs up. We just recently had a young man come through, did three tours, received gunshot wounds, and he wants to go back to college. And he got his new service dog that will help him pull him up from a chair, help him stand if he falls, retrieve open doors, carries his books, and then is with him when he goes back out into the public. So that person alone is now going back to college, is now reengaging back in society, and his parents and his family members are, you know, they don't even recognize him, you know, from when he came back to when he is now with his dog. Annabelle, the 90 or 91-year-old World War II veteran. I mean, she does everything with that dog. You know, it's like Annabelle goes to the VA. She goes to her doctor's appointments. She goes to play cards with all her friends and stuff, and they don't even ask how she's doing. They want to know how Joe's doing. And that dog opens doors for her, braces for her, carries things, picks stuff up for her. You know, we had another client recently that she was retiring. She was actually a medical surgeon. She was an Army surgeon and had gotten hit with an IED. And she thought she tried to do her rounds. She came back and she literally lives up in a little town in the West Coast. And the dog carries her medical pads, her stethoscope, and the equipment she needs from patient to patient to patient, and then picks things up for her because she doesn't have the use of her right arm. So literally the dog is her right arm. So she's back to seeing patients every day. I mean, and we have story after story after story, and that's what these dogs do.
Yeah, I know what it feels like when you lose use of your right arm, since I've had my right shoulder replaced. We have a question up in the chat room. Vito has another question, and if I can read this because I'm having problems with my eyeglasses. He wants to know, if the dogs are not compatible with placements, do they get reassigned to another vet, or will you give that dog back to the trainer, provided they're not an inmate?
Yeah. So what happens is, you know, not every single placement's 100% perfect. And so what we do is we evaluate what's going on. We go into the home. You know, we have field trainers, too, field representatives at the Guide Dog Foundation, where when you go through class, one of the nice things about you coming here and you coming on class is if you need help back in Rhode Island or back in Connecticut or out in New Mexico or Arizona, we go with you. We'll go home with you and help you settle back into your home environment. If it doesn't make it, then we bring the dog back. We evaluate the dog. We try to get another dog in for that veteran, and we try to, and then we reassign that dog to another veteran. We actually have that. We have a September 29th class starting here at America's Vet Dogs, and one of the dogs that's in class was, it just so happens, the dog went out about 7 or 8 months ago, and the client passed away. We brought the dog back, and we're sending the dog back out with another veteran.
Yeah. What do you do, what if you, obviously you select these dogs as a puppy, but what do you do with the dogs if they have problem with the training or cannot be trained?
So lots of different things. One, you know, we have a lot of options here at the foundation. They can be a guide dog, they can be a service dog, they can be a seizure response dog, they can be a hearing dog, they can be a combat stress dog. There's lots of options for dogs here. You know, it's not a one kind of dog, and that's the only thing we do here. And then if they don't make our train in our program, then we actually offer them to the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the Department of ATF. We offer them to fire departments to be arson detection dogs. We offer them to other law enforcement agencies for narcotics and explosive detection dogs. We try to our dogs are bred to be working dogs, and it, maybe it's not a working guide dog or a working service dog, but maybe it is a working explosive detector dog that will go out and serve society.
Now, having worked with the people inside NYPD that were handlers on their canine dogs, the ones that are the sniffers, I understand that there's only just a certain amount of times you can use that dog before they end up not being able to detect. Is that true?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the first part of your question. Could you just ask that to me again?
Well, having worked in NYPD with canine cops, I know that the ones that are the sniffers, especially
right.
if it's for explosives, you can only use them for just a certain amount of time before you
right.
have to let them rest or end up retiring them.
Sure. Yeah. So with the scent detection dogs, any kind of scent detection animal, you can work the dog as long as it's healthy and the work isn't detrimental to the dog's health. And as long as they still have the ability to hit the scents and you know, work the explosives and work the narcotics or work the incendiary devices, you can work a dog as, you know, for a good life before it gets to retire and be a nice pet. But as a handler, that's your responsibility to know when that's acceptable and when it's time for retirement.
All right. I mean, when I worked in NYPD, I was over in Brooklyn. I always became a canine handler, and I was always fascinated with it, but it never did happen. So
sure.
I'm just so proud
okay.
of what you do, so glad that we can help you. And your website
Thank you.
Is vetdogs.org, or you can go up on Facebook, American Vet Dogs, or on Twitter, American Vet Dogs, and check them out and make a donation. You know, what are some of the different things people can donate if they cannot donate money?
You know, they can donate blankets, towels, toys, dog bones. We take, all kinds of different time. You know, time is a huge value for us. We have projects. We have events that go on. I mean, we can always use people's time for our events and our dog walks and things that go on campus here. And they can actually get a hold of us at 1-800-VOLUNTEERS. Oh.
All right. I'll
I'm sorry.
That up
I'm
in the...
wrong. We have over 1,300 volunteers that we use on a regular basis here.
Yeah. Right. Ken, how does somebody go about becoming one of your weekend puppy raisers?
Good question. You simply go to our website, and you can actually click on Puppy Walker or Foster Puppy Raising. You bet. And you can do it for the prison. You can do it full time. You can you name it. We've got it. We've got opportunities here.
So people, Now, I got another question, because I happen to end up, later on in life, I end up becoming allergic to dogs. Do you take that into consideration?
We do. Sure, of course we have to. We have to. Of course we have some people who are allergic to dogs. And then we'll do any number of things. We'll send some of the, let's say the spouse of the veteran is allergic to dogs. So we'll the dog that we think we're going to train with them, we'll send some dog hair to them, and then find out if have them put it out on the table and see if they have allergic reaction. We can see if they can medication of certain dogs. You know, not all, just because they're allergic doesn't mean they're allergic to every single dog. And we do breed a certain number of poodles, not a lot, but we do use standard poodles, which of course are, you know, standard poodles are duck hunters. You know, everybody sees them with the little marshmallow and cream puffs on their tail and their feet and stuff, but the truth is poodles are duck hunting dogs. That's what they're bred to do, and that's why they have the hair they have, and they're great retrieving dogs. We don't have a lot of them. But if they are allergic and we really want to place an assistance dog with them, then we'll potentially place them with one of our poodles.
Now, how did you end up over at Vet Dogs? Because you said that you had been working with all the others. You know, was it through the Guide Dog Foundation, or what drove you into this organization?
Well, so for me, it was, I've worked at a couple of different organizations since I got out. When I first got out of the service, I went to work at Paws with a Cause in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And then I worked at Canine Companions for Independence out in Santa Rosa. And then I know Wells Jones, the CEO, and I know Sheila O'Brien, who's the director of consumers here. And they talked to me about coming out here and visiting Vet Dogs. And my wife also happens to be a trainer here, and she has a real connection to veterans. Her father was a World War II veteran in the 527th Parachute Squadron, and there's a book on the 527th. His name's Lieutenant Reber, and he's in the book. And of course, being a veteran and coming from a long line of veterans in my own family, this seemed like a perfect fit for us. We came out, visited the foundation. It was like, okay, we're definitely going to come out here and take over this program. So,
how do you like living in New York?
I like it. I got to tell you, I've been all over the world, and it's not that much different from Michigan, other than the cost of things, you know.
All right. So, looks like Dan's call dropped off. Dan, are you back with us?
I'm back with you.
All right. Now, Cal, go ahead. You have a question? Did we lose Cal?
Okay.
Well, I guess we lost Cal. I guess so. But, you know.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
It's
now,
on the record.
Now, the people that go to you through the VA, can they use their VA benefits to pay for this? You know, does any money come out of anyone's pocket? Any individual that goes to you? Not a dime?
No, it doesn't cost. We don't. It doesn't cost anyone a dime. We don't charge anything for anything. The transportation is picked up by the Guide Dog Foundation. The food is the chef is Guide Dog Foundation. The training is Guide Dog Foundation. The dogs are the Guide Dog Foundation. The housing, everything's done through us. Everything's done through the Guide Dog Foundation.
So the majority of vets that you do have dogs placed with come out to Smithtown and stay for a while. And how long do
they
end up?
Yeah, they have to come out here, a two-week class.
Two-week class. And then within 2 weeks, you have the dog trained to the specific vet.
The dog's already trained, but before we invite the veteran in for class, and now we're just teaching them. In the 2 weeks, we're actually training the veteran how to utilize the dog. Dogs are done. The dogs are cooked. They're all ready to go. It's just a matter of we have to show the veteran how to be a good dog handler.
All right. Now, what happens, for example, if you have a veteran in Alaska that cannot get to you for whatever reason? Do you go out to them then?
Sure, of course. We'll do home placements. That's why we have our field representatives. Mm-hmm.
And this is in all 50 states?
Yes, Canada, Puerto Rico, you bet. Mm-hmm.
Oh, even up in Canada?
Sure.
Wow. Go ahead, Dan. Dan?
Sorry, I was clearing my throat there for a second. I got choked up trying to... Give me just a second, Annie.
Well, I want to let people know that they're listening to Southern Sense, the call-in number if they'd like to speak to Ken Kirsch of vetdogs.org. It's 917-889-3675. So feel free to place your question up in the chat room or give us a call in here. So, Dan, you have your question. Go ahead.
Well, you know, you have a lot of I find you have a lot of corporate sponsorship as well. Wouldn't you, if any businesses or other organizations out there would like to host an event for you, would like to become a corporate sponsor, why don't you explain to them about how they would go about doing that, especially if they would like to, host an event for you and what you guys do to help them host a special event for your organization?
Sure. So we actually have a development department here that's headed up by our director, Catherine Fritz. And you can call to the 800 number here at the Guide Dog Foundation, and you can talk to them about sponsorship, and there's different types of sponsorship, third-party fundraising, there's fundraising, you want to host an event. I mean, absolutely anything that you can think of. We've done car washes, bake sales, golf outings, dog walks, 5Ks, motorcycle poker runs. I mean, you name it. We're definitely interested in being on board with it, and they can actually call at 631-930-9090 or 1-866 Vet Dogs and get right into our development department.
Right, and is your facilities open for public tours? Say somebody just happens to be in the area and they'd like to take a tour of your facilities. Are they open to the public?
Sure. You just got to come to the front desk and check in.
That's easy and simple enough.
Yeah, you can also go to the website, and it's actually on the website where you can set up a time to come and tour. Mm-hmm.
Now,
especially, you really would have to, but sure, you can most certainly just stop here too. But, if you're planning on bringing a group of people or something like that, get on our website, let us know, and, we set up demonstrate, all kinds of things. It depends on how many folks are coming, but if you're driving by and you pull in, stop at the front desk.
And I'm looking at all the different types of dogs, from the guide dog to the service dog, the combat stress relief dog, the military therapy dogs. But you also offer assistive technology like GPS devices. How does that work?
We don't. Yeah, that's really – as far as the service dog programs, we don't do that for the service dog programs. That's more towards the guide dog side of the house.
Well, the service dogs I'm looking at on your brochure says it's specifically trained to help people who have disabilities other than visual impairment. That's how they stressed it on the brochure.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was questioning about that. But we were talking about that, how it helped people carrying things, getting them to sit up and so on and so forth. One of the things is we've got so many vets coming back disabled, and with this war on terror, we're seeing types of disabilities that we haven't seen in the past. So your company, vetdogs.org, has had to adapt to these new situations. Is your military experience helped with that adaption?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think I kind of bring a firsthand knowledge into what it's like and who these guys are and who these gals are and what we're going through. I think that's important, especially for military people to trust other military people. And, I bring everybody in, and the first thing we do is we sit down and we talk about who we are, what we're doing. We talk about trust. We talk about esprit de corps. We talk about camaraderie. And we talk about making yourself vulnerable and willing to take a risk, and that we're a team, and we're going to take care of each other through this process.
Now, go ahead, Dan. I'm like halfway through a thought. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to ask was, obviously, there, with so many veterans coming back from Afghanistan, from Iraq, et cetera, there is a very large demand for service and guide dogs, et cetera. Is there a very long waiting list to be matched up with a dog? And are you guys able to keep up with the demand for the dogs?
You know, right now we are. Our waiting list, you know, once you apply and you go through the process of filling out the application, getting the references, getting the doctor's portions, et cetera, filled out and doing an interview, after you've been accepted and put on our list, the waiting list for a vet dog is you're normally under 6 months.
Now, there was a special on a group of homeless veterans out in California, and how every year they have this whole big thing where the vets come in and apply for assistance. Have you been able to help any homeless veterans with these dogs?
You know, I don't I can't think of any homeless veterans, honestly, right off the top of my head. You know, they have to be, once they leave here, they have to be able to financially be able to buy the dog food, take care of the dog, make sure they maintain the equipment, and, you know, make sure they have medical care for the dogs.
Ah, that's interesting. Now, we're going to take a one-minute break and try to earn a couple of more dollars, so we'll be back in 1 minute, and here we go.
While we take a very short break, let me tell you about our sponsor, Audible. Audible are books that you can download online, and you can sit back and don't have to read. You can hear it play in the background. I checked out the free trial, and the free trial you can check out is at audibletrial.com/southernsense. And the book I chose to download by free trial was The Federalist Papers, and I can't wait, because when I sit in my office and I'm working, I like something playing in the background. Normally it's, you know, listening to some other talk show or listening to some music. But this way, I can be enriched and have something. I don't have time to sit down and read hour after hour. I got over 9 hours of recording of over $30 value of the Federalist Papers as a free sample. Just trying out audibletrial.com/southernsense. Check them out. You'll be pleased.
All right. We're back. Now, you had mentioned being able to afford medical care for the dogs. Have you hooked up with any of these pet insurance companies?
Well, so with the veterans, one of the things we help the veterans do is get their service dogs as what's called a dogger record through the VA. And then the VA can usually picks up the medical care for the dog once the dog becomes officially their dog of record. But the other thing, too, is we also help our veterans, you know, get local veterinary care, you know, because you have to be able to do, you know, your annual physical and your shots and everything for the dog. And we also have a stipend here that the veterans can use to buy, flea products and medicines and things and so on for the lifetime of the dog also.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, because with my cats, I end up having pet insurance to help make sure I don't go into debt taking care of them. But
yeah.
It's interesting that they actually become part of the VA medical care.
Yeah, they can. They have to go through a process, you know, a typical VA process, and that's. But we help guide them through that process. It's called the dog of record.
How long does something like that normally take? Because we've been hearing so much about the nightmares going on with the VA, and I'm assuming that's the one up on Fort Salonga that you're working with.
It's their local VA, wherever VA use it, whatever community, wherever they're from in the country, that's the VA they go through. Honestly, some of them they've gotten the dog a record relatively quickly, and some of them, it's a nightmare.
Ah. So not only are our vets are having the problems, the dogs are having the problems with the VA.
I think it's just a matter of a lot of the VAs have no idea what you're talking about with dog a record, but that's why we're there to support the veteran. So.
And then you have someone that helps the vet walk through that entire process. You don't just basically give them the dog and then say, bye, have a nice life.
Oh, no. We are governed by Assistance Dogs International. The Guide Dog Foundation is the only duly accredited International Guide Dog Federation accredited and Assistance Dogs Internationally accredited agencies. And we're all governed by ADI and IGDF, and we have yearly recertifications. We have follow-ups. We're there for the lifetime of the team.
Wow, that's amazing. And I'm just curious, how much do one of these dogs cost?
Well, they cost us right now about $50,000 a team.
Wow.
Wow.
And it doesn't cost the vet a single penny, but it's $50,000 per team. How many have you actually placed?
Total out of the foundation, I think we placed well over 100 dogs last year.
Per year. And how long has this been going on?
Since the Guide Dog Foundation has been here since 1946. American Vet Dog has been here since 2003.
Wow, so you're talking about over 100 dogs a year at $50,000 a pop, and you do this all through donations?
All through donations.
That is absolutely amazing. So if people wanted to help, they go to vetdogs.org and just click on the donation button, as simple as that.
You better believe it. It'd be great.
Ken, we now know that there's a lot of time, effort, and money that goes into training these dogs to assist our veterans. And I think, you know, today a lot of people, you know, see a lot of the dogs assisting a lot of our wounded warriors coming back with post-traumatic stress disorder and such. And we alluded to that, you know, we're facing a lot of new things. You know, we alluded earlier that, you know, we're facing a lot of new things with our veterans coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq right now that we've never seen before. So, and obviously you kind of have to plan ahead with your training of the dogs and such. So so in the future, in kind of anticipation, what are some of the areas that you think are going to be some of the most stressing areas that you're going to have to train your dogs for to accommodate all of our veterans that are in need of the services?
I think one of the big things that's going to be coming up, especially as your veteran community ages, is I think hearing dogs. And with all of the explosions and et cetera, I think hearing dogs is going to be we're going to have a lot more requests for training hearing dogs for people who lost their hearing. And then I think the other type of dog would be the PTSD dog to help people combat the post-traumatic stress disorder, which we address now.
Yeah, because there's so many different ways people react under PTSD. It's very funny. How do you know specifically what to train for? You know, because some people will have reactions where they just react to sound or sudden movement. Others end up having convulsions or lack of sleep. How do you handle a PTSD dog? Because, like I said, there's so many different ways people can suffer PTSD.
Well, sure. We vet all that out through our application process and our questionnaire process. And then we find out if somebody needs nightmare interruption training from their dog, or does somebody need a social barrier for their dog, or that type of thing. It's all part of our process, you know, with our custom training. Not everybody does. And so we don't spend a whole bunch of time training commands for that people will never use. We spend our time and our money training commands for things that the veteran needs for them to live a more independent, fulfilled life.
And that's interesting, because now when you're training these dogs, do you have someone already in mind for them?
We always have someone in mind. Yeah, we have a whole system here where we're reviewing the applications and everything. And then we meet, and we have a matching team, and we have a matching process that we go through, and we do everything as a team here. And then once we identify a dog for a particular veteran, then that's the way, then we start going towards the direction with that dog for that veteran.
That's very interesting, because, you know, after I retired, I found, like, loud sounds, you know, sudden loud sounds, like a car backfiring or something like that. Or if someone comes into my view that I did not hear approaching me, I would jump.
Sure.
So and you have the dogs trained to alert them that something's happening like that.
Only if there's something that the veteran needs. Mm-hmm.
Now, what are some of the more interesting ones that you've trained for veterans?
You mean tasks?
Yeah, some of the more interesting and odd.
Well, I mean, I've trained a service dog for a veteran that was paralyzed from the neck down and couldn't speak. And I got a little tone machine that made different tones. And, like, each tone would mean something different. Like, you'd push a certain buzz sound would mean retrieve. A certain buzz sound would mean give me something to drink. A certain buzz sound would be open a door. We've trained dogs to lift up veterans' heads because they don't have any more neck muscles, lift their arms and lift their legs, cross their legs, cross their arms. Some veterans are on sip and puff wheelchairs, and the straw is very flexible. And if the veteran loses the straw, then their independence, the ability to move is completely gone. And a task nothing more than simply teaching the dog on command to put the straw back in the veteran's mouth so they have their independence back.
Now that is fascinating. Wow. Because,
yeah.
You know, here in South Carolina, we've got a lot of military, so you see some of these vets around there, and the fact that you guys are able to help them is a godsend. Do you have like a reunion where everyone gathers for one of these classes and every year, you know, just reassociate or not?
No, we don't. Yeah, we don't do that, but a lot of classes stay together. They you know, especially the way you guys can, everybody can communicate nowadays, they do it. You know, through texting and group texting, and they all get on Facebook and all that kind of stuff too. So there's a million ways they can stay connected. So,
right. You know, Ken, obviously there comes a point in time where the dog is no longer, you know, probably reaches an age that they're no longer able to perform the duty that they were trained for with these veterans. So what happens to the dog after that? Do they remain with the family as a pet, or do we try to move them on to a different family or retrain them for a different duty? What happens to them after that?
Well, what we do is once you're in the family, you're always in the family. So.
Right.
You become a successor client. So you go to the top of our list, and it depends what the veteran wants to do. You know, we can leave the home, we retire the dog, and then, you know, the puppy walker who raised the dog, you know, 12 years earlier might want the dog in its retirement age, or it could go to a family member, and if not, it can come back here to the school, and we place it in a retirement home. But yeah, we start all over again with a new dog.
Wow.
Oh, man, it is absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. Great.
Now,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Ken.
I'm going to say if we can answer some few more questions, and maybe we can get her going. I got to get going here pretty soon.
Well, I don't see any more questions coming up in the chat room, but if anyone wants to post one up, we'll gladly put it forward to you. But have you ever had where you had like one line of succession through one specific dog, more like, for example, your favorite Fido, that the son of Fido and the son of Fido just proved to be like your king of the kennel?
Yeah, I mean, we have some breeding stock here that have produced a lot of dogs for us over the year, and then their offspring have produced offspring, and their offspring have produced offspring, and their offspring have produced offspring. Yeah, because when you get a successful line of dogs that work for a lot of different people, that, you know, you want to keep them going.
Well, Ken, this has been very, very fascinating, and I want to thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's been great. You know, I appreciate it. Anytime you guys, if you're interested, if I haven't bored anybody to death too bad, I'd be glad to come back on.
Oh, you're welcome
well,
to come back on anytime.
Oh, yeah. Ken, you've been an absolutely amazing guest, and thank you for answering all of our questions. And, man, I would certainly love to speak with you again sometime as well.
Sure. All right.
All right. And the website is vetdogs.org. Thank you so much, Ken.
That's it. You guys have a good day. See ya.
All right. You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
What a fascinating, fascinating guest, Dan.
Oh, my gosh. You know, Annie, this is, you know, we can't stress enough how important these types of organizations are for our veterans, for our wounded veterans, you know, because once again, and we tell these, you know, it takes a very special person to go into the military, you know, just like it takes a very special person to become a police officer or a firefighter, et cetera, but particularly in the military, because, you know, these folks know that, you know, they're going to be risking their lives, putting their life on the line, and in some cases, when they do come back, they have had to make a sacrifice, you know, whether they were wounded
did. They come back, mentally wounded as well, et cetera. So, these were usually folks that were very vibrant in life, had very productive lives, they had a zest for life. And when they come back, a lot of times they've lost that zest for life, and in many cases a will to live. And so something such as this, different projects, and we'll use this as a prime example, these type of service dogs and something, they're just looking for something to kind of give them a hand up, to help them, put a little spark back into them. And these type of dogs and the type of services that Ken provides and it can certainly help that, and there's, of course, lots of other organizations out there that can do the same thing with our veterans, but we really have to stress that, this the important roles that these type of organizations play in helping our veterans return to maybe not a completely normal life, but to help them find a sense of purpose and to return to as much of a normal life that they possibly can.
Yeah, it is amazing, because going through my own personal experiences, over the years, I'm wondering how much something like this would have helped me. Just curious, because that I've been through all the pain and everything else, and a mild form of PTSD, yes, but, I've been able to cope, thankfully, because a lot of my husband and my doctors, but to have something like this available, and, for the veterans that are coming back, have you ever noticed that the World War I veterans thought that when the World War II veterans were coming back were complaining too much? And the same with Korea, and then with the Vietnam, they're complaining too much. But to bring all these eras together, to have someone from World War II and someone from the War on Terror in the same class, to let them know that, hey, listen, this has happened before. We can share the experience. We can give each other the buddy system and help each other back up on your feet. And I think that's a fantastic thing that they're doing.
Exactly. And, especially looking at our older generation of veterans, we're losing, I think the rate that we're losing our World War II veterans is like 1,000 a day now. And then pretty soon we're going to be losing our Korean and Vietnam veterans at those type of rates too. But, what they do is, especially a lot of our younger generation of wounded warriors and folks that have served, there is so much when you bring all these different generations together, there is so much that they can all learn from one another because they have experienced a lot of the same things and are going through a lot of the same things. And so it really helps them all to be able to cope because once again, whether it's being, having a service or guide dog to help or just a network of support, all these folks need in some cases is just a little support. And for somebody to let them know that they care and that they're there, to help them, not to give them a handout. That's not what these folks are looking for. They're looking for a hand up. They're looking just for something to grasp onto to give them that sense of purpose in life again. And when you bring all of this together, all of these support groups, all this support system together, it goes a long way into, bringing, a spirit of life back into to these folks that have, we cannot underestimate, we cannot thank these folks enough for everything they've sacrificed so that the rest of us can be free and can live our lives, to have the freedom to do the radio show that we're doing today, et cetera, et cetera. It goes on and on and on. And I think we as a community and us as a people, we need to make sure that, that our veterans are taken care of because, sadly, today too many of them fall between the cracks, and that should not happen, especially in our society today. It should not happen, Annie.
No, it doesn't. It should not happen. And the worst part is a lot of veterans, when they are being separated from the service, they have an extremely hard time coping because when they went in the military, their day was so structured. They were told when to get up, when to eat, where to go, what to wear. So they were accustomed to an extremely structured lifestyle. Once they separate and they're back here, in America, wherever they decide to go, they've lost that structure. But having these dogs brings structure back into their lives because they know that they have to take care of the animal and the animal will take care of them. And it gives them, as he said before, a non-judgmental buddy, someone to talk to.
Right, and you know, and like Kim was stating, you know, these dogs and these veterans, they actually develop a very close bond and very close relationship because they are matched, they are screened to go together. The dogs are trained specifically for these veterans' needs. Then the veteran comes in and works with them, and they become they're not a tool for the veteran. They become a part of the veteran themselves and a part of their family. They're with them 24/7, night and day. And so, it does give them, once again, you know, when they go through all the training and stuff, it gives them that sense of purpose, and it certainly gives them the ability to go out in society again. And if they do have issues with, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder or other things like that, it certainly helps them to feel like they're being a part of normal society again.
And now, when I had mentioned the homeless vets, I wish they had some sort of a program for that, you know, somewhere that the VA should be able to take these guys and say, hey, listen, we can help you get back up on your feet and get off the street. Let's look at getting you into a program similar to this, you know, getting you a place to live, finding you a job or whatever it is, so that you can be financially able to handle one of these animals and they can help you get your life and dignity back again. That's what I wish the VA would do.
Right, and people have to understand. There's always an underlying reason why somebody is homeless. There's always, especially when it comes to homeless veterans. Yeah, there are certain people out there that have chosen to be homeless, but most people, the majority of people, are not homeless by choice. There's something that has happened to make them be in that situation, and a lot of times, with our military veterans, the reason they have become homeless is because of what they have gone through. You know, particularly if they were overseas and they were serving in a wartime situation, and a lot of that affects them personally, where they're not able to cope with life in general. And so, you would think that a program like this would be a very useful tool into helping that veteran, you know, come back into society where they would be able to function again, be able to hold down a job, be able to support themselves, reunite with their family as well.
Yeah, that's what we can hope that would happen. But, you know, the fact that this program does exist is such a godsend. And I'm urging everyone to go to vetdogs.org and, you know, give a donation, whether or not you send a bag of dog food or some toys or even a monetary donation. Just check them out and let's help the vets, because I don't think our government will ever truly give them the enough help that they need. You know what I'm saying? We never give them enough.
Exactly. And especially with the yes, I'm going to go there. Especially with the current administration we have, President Obama, he's no friend to our veterans. He's no friend to our men and women currently serving. And of course, you know, President Obama is the fixture of a progressive movement that is trying to take hold in our country today that is very anti-military and very against our veterans. And so it's up to, you know, people like us, Annie, to get the word out there on our shows, on our news networks, and to spread the word about, you know, organizations such as Ken, you know, to Ken's, you know, to let them know that there are ways that we can support our veterans where our government is absolutely refusing to do so today.
Oh, man, you said a mouthful. You know, this show has gone so fast. We're down to our last 5 minutes here. Can you believe that, Dan? And I think we lost Kel somewhere along the way. And unfortunately, Cool Mike didn't stick around for too long. But we got Sue from New Mexico. Sweet Sue is listening in. And Sue, we'll give you a shout-out and let you know that you were in this week's church bulletin on the prayer list in my parish. So prayers are going out to you, Sweet Sue. Want to thank everyone that's been up in the chat room. I got to have to admit, I've been changing my eyeglasses back and forth throughout the whole entire show because I'm having a hard time seeing through them. So the medication I'm on has been altering my eyesight. So bear with me if I'm not saying hi to everyone that's out there in the chat room. But I want to thank everyone for joining us. Dan, this has been a fun show.
Oh, once again, like I said at the beginning of today's show, you know, this is, I always look forward to doing your show on Tuesday and Friday because you just come up with the most amazing guests that, you know, obviously we do our share of political talk on the show, but it's certainly nice to be able to do a show like this so that, you know, we can hopefully, you know, get the information out there to get, you know, if we could just get one of our veterans the help they need, then I think we've done the job for the day.
If we can help just one. And Pastor Mike that called in, he's going to be hooking up with our guest, Ken, and helping a specific vet. So we did help at least one veteran today.
That's true. And so once again, you know, if we can do that, then we are, you know, it makes it all worthwhile, Annie. It really, really does.
Yeah. Now, Smoke just put up in the chat room that Kel has a show on tonight. So, Kel, if you're listening and post it up in the chat room, just check her out on Jihad Radio and Red Fox, Kel Fritzy. Smoke, if you have a link to her show, since we seem to have lost Kel, put it up in the chat room before we leave. But we got a great show coming up on Friday. We've got a new artist out. His name is Ed Vintage. He's got a new CD out called Highway Hymns and Outlaw Anthems. And believe it or not, this rockabilly singer and songwriter is calling in from Germany, where he lives, from Mannheim, Germany. So that's going to be very interesting.
That should be another great show.
And
probably with some great music as well.
Yes. So I have to upload that so we can get the show set up for Friday. But he had posted me through our website, which is southern-sense.com. Go join it. And he said he's on the German version of the Tea Party. So that should be very interesting to hear from from the Germans that are following our Tea Party movement here. So, all right, Luca Dora put up the link to Kel's show. So thanks a lot, Luca. It looks like Gulf Dog and Smokey is going to be harassing Kel tonight. So that should be an interesting show. I'll try to see if I can pop in. And maybe you'll pop in, Dan, and annoy the heck out of poor Kel.
I'm going to try to annoy her as much as I can.
So with that saying, I want to say good night and God bless to everyone out there. And thanks, Dan and Kel, for joining us. Be safe, and we'll see you Friday. Same bat time, same bat station.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud, American.